We're taking a short break to tell you a little bit about the 10% Happier podcast hosted by my friend Dan Harris. It has one guiding philosophy. Happiness is a skill you can learn, so why not master it? I recently talked to him on our show about what has changed since he wrote 10% Happier 10 years ago. A lot. Dan was once a fidgety, skeptical journalist, but after suffering a panic attack on national television, he decided to change his life. This journey led him to learn everything he could about the human psyche. Now he's on a quest to help others achieve peace and happiness. Each week, he talks to top scientists, meditation teachers, and even the odd celebrity, exploring topics like productivity, anxiety, enlightenment, psychedelics, and relationships. He's funny. He's smart. He's one of the best interviewers I know. Think of listening to 10% Happier as a workout for your mind. The 10% Happier podcast is available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome to Untangle, the podcast from Five Star App Meditation Studio, and Muse, the brain sensing headband that gives you feedback on your meditation practice. I'm Patricia Karpus, co-founder of Meditation Studio and your host on Untangle, along with my co-host, Muse founder Ariel Garten. This month, we're focusing on happiness. What is it? How do you invite more of it into your life? How do we actually find more meaning, fulfillment, and purpose? Each guest this month will help Ariel and I explore this topic. As always, if you have feedback, comments, or suggestions, especially on the subject of happiness, email us at founders@meditationstudioapp.com. Today's guest is one of our all-time favorites on Meditation Studio, Elisha Goldstein. Elisha is a co-founder of the Center for Mindful Living in LA, a psychologist and best-selling author of more than five books, including Uncovering Happiness, Overcoming Depression, With Mindfulness and Self-Compassion. He shares how we can find more meaning, purpose, and connection in our lives, and how this can help us to be more resilient in almost any situation. You'll also be surprised at some of the myths he shares about what happiness actually is. It's not just about feeling good. As you probably know, there's much, much more to it. Let's dive in with Elisha. So I'd like to talk today about happiness.
It's a hot topic.
It's a hot topic, right? We all want to be happy. And first, tell me a little bit about how you got into meditation, but also why you chose happiness as a subject to explore.
Okay. Well, you know, I got into meditation in the same reason most people get into meditation, which is I was working in San Francisco and during the dot-com boom, and I was working hard, but I was playing a whole lot harder. So I was really kind of diving into some very destructive habits. And so I was suffering quite a bit and I was confused. And inevitably, I started first reading about meditation. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people do it. Maybe nowadays, I feel like there's meditation studios available.
Exactly.
So you could just kind of drop in now. Back then, you didn't have those things. And so I was reading about it and seeking people out. And, you know, inevitably, I left the corporate world, went back to school to study psychology. And I ran into it again because I was interested in, for myself and for other people, helping us all create more meaningful moments in our lives to, like, really find the meaning and purpose, you know, in life. And I wanted to help people create moments called sacred moments. And I realized in order to help people realize sacred moments or meaningful moments in their lives, they had to first be present. Mm. And they had to learn how to do that. And so I reached out and studied again and found that. And so one of the leading programs out there that was working with helping people become present and also with stress reduction and variety of things like that was mindfulness-based stress reduction. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so mindfulness-based stress reduction, while I had been practicing a little meditation prior to that, really provided the structure for me to, you know, dip in and learn how to actually create a practice, a mindfulness meditation practice. And it was secular, so it kind of spoke to me too.
Yeah.
That was my entryway, really.
Just winding back a little bit, so you're studying psychology at this point, and how do you come up with this idea that you want to help people create more sacred moments? I'm really curious about that.
There was an emptiness there. I think while I was in San Francisco during that time and really being destructive, there were certainly ups and downs of being depressed, feeling lost, feeling lonely. You know, even I had a lot of friends around me. Sometimes I just would feel, you know, alone in that way. I was looking for connection, and I think sacred moments is, you know, allowing is a sense of feeling connected to thing, people and all things around you. It's a sense of meaning and purpose in life. As I started to really study happiness, there I went back to kind of, you know, the way the Greeks originally defined it, which was there was eudaimonic happiness and there was hedonic happiness. And hedonic happiness is just kind of engaging in pleasure in life. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong with that, although it's just not lasting. And if we're always looking for the pleasure in life, we're going to inevitably be disappointed and have a tough time with the the difficulties that are there.
Yeah.
So eudaimonic happiness was more of like a sense of feeling connected, a sense of feeling meaning and purpose in life. So I realized what's more important than feeling a sense of meaning and purpose in life. And so I wanted to cultivate that for myself and then for other people. And so that was where the kind of research began. And it was to, I guess I felt like if you feel a sense of meaning and purpose and connection in life, that is a, that's a natural sense of resiliency.
Mm-hmm.
And I can look back years from now laying on my deathbed and look back on my life and say, wow, I really kind of was present for life and the things that I was present to really mattered.
So did mindfulness-based stress reduction, when you started doing that, that helped you to be more present for moments and then you maybe define those as sacred moments, but I guess that doesn't really matter how you define them, but in that they are – you are present for what is happening in your
Every
life.
Every present moment is a sacred moment.
Every present moment.
Yeah, because they're never, it's, there's just like a flower blooms and dies.
Yeah.
And so you look at, we're all in love with things that don't last very long. Butterflies sometimes live 24 hours. And so they're beautiful to us because they're precious and rare. And so our, the moments of our lives, every single moment that we're living is precious and rare. And oftentimes we don't realize that because, you know, we, our brain kind of creates, makes things automatic. And so we just kind of fall into routine. One of the people who really influenced my life in the way I think sometimes, or a portion of it, is this guy, Abraham Joshua Heschel. He was a rabbi, a philosopher. He marched with Martin Luther King. And he has this really wonderful quote out of one of his books that said, life is routine, and routine is resistance to wonder. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we're – and if you look at neuroscience, we're kind of – crafted to make things routine so we can handle more and more difficult things, more complex things in life. And so we have to actually pause and open up to the reality, almost wake up, that really moment to moment, there's no moment like another moment in our life. And so every moment is really a sacred moment if we understand it that way. And so, you know, in some ways, uncovering happiness is partly the mindfulness and our ability to bring our heart into it, what I might call self-compassion, recognizing difficulty, inclining to support ourselves. Those are the two fundamental pillars to begin to wake up and recognize what really matters in our lives. And then we can start kind of angling ourselves in different directions towards, you know, what do I actually want to do in this moment with my life, with myself?
How do we make this real for people? Because this idea of being present in every moment, and there, we have moments where we're not happy and we're frustrated at work, or we're taking care of a loved one that's going to die any moment. And while those might be sacred moments, we're not feeling happy. How do you
see this? Well, this gets to the definition of happiness.
Yes, good.
So you're implicit in the way you're talking about it is happiness is a positive emotion, positive feeling. Happiness means feeling good, which really my definition of happiness is not. It's not your happiness is not always about feeling good. Happiness is this rock solid confidence that no matter what comes my way, I'm going to be okay. And so in other words, there's a natural inbred resiliency.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can be with someone who's – I'm having a difficult moment right now. My kid's crying. I'm taking care of my mom who no longer is functional as she used to. I'm at work and someone piled a whole bunch of things on my desk and said I have 2 hours to do it and I know it's going to take longer. I'm going to be home late, frustration, I'm in traffic. Oh, this is awful, terrible. Our mind's complaining, whining. And so what this allows us to do is, so mindfulness being a fundamental pillar, is pause, recognize we get caught in something that I call the depression loop. You can also call it the stress loop. It's a conditioned reaction of thoughts, emotions, sensations, and behaviors or actions. So the moment we're caught in that stress reaction is a moment we can pause and wake up and recognize that I'm stuck, I'm hooked in something. How do I want to relate to this moment? So happiness is about feeling in control. There's a certain sense of personal control. And so I, instead of continuing with this reaction that's causing suffering, I recognize, wow, I'm having a difficult moment right now. This is really hard for me. Mm-hmm. And in that moment, we've named it. So the neuroscience behind that shows that that kind of down-regulates the emotional center of our brain. That's kind of firing and brings more blood flow to the prefrontal area, which is more involved with emotion regulation and maybe more intentionality. And so then I say, wow, okay, well, I'm suffering, right? This is really hard for me in this moment, whatever, any moment. We could do this in any moment in life. The moment we name it, we've kind of gained a little perspective on it. And then we say, I'm not the only one that suffers. This happens to me and people in life. What is it that I'm really needing right now? And so then we kind of get to, basically, it's kind of like, wow, I'm sick, you know, in this moment, like when we have a cold. What do I really need right now?
We'll take a short break for one of our awesome sponsors, Born Shoes. I was so excited to try these cute, casual sandals made with top quality leather, perfect for all the traveling that I do. They're so comfortable for walking anywhere. I know exactly why their tagline is, "Take comfort in Born Shoes." Perfect. There are 5 new styles this spring, and I tried Ithaca and absolutely love them. But they also have boots and heels you should try. They feel as good as they look. Go to bornshoes.com today for a 15% discount plus ground shipping on all full price shoes when you use my promo code UNTANGLE. That's promo code UNTANGLE for 15% off and free shipping. Available exclusively to our listeners for just a limited time. Now, back to our show.
My name's Dwayne Osterlin. I'm host of the Addicted Mind podcast. Are you ready to uncover the science of breaking addiction? Then join me on the Addicted Mind, where compassion meets innovation. We're going to explore real stories of addiction recovery, hear from real experts on science-based treatment, and you'll be able to equip yourself with the tools for lasting change. So whether you're on the road to recovery yourself or walking alongside someone who is, the Addicted Mind podcast is your companion. So check it out. Subscribe on whatever podcast app you're using right now and be part of the conversation that's changing lives.
I need to rest, or I need to care for myself. Being emotionally dysregulated is pretty much the same thing. If we think of it as like the physiology of it, where our nervous system is inflamed, our blood flow in our brain is kind of imbalanced at the same time. But the bottom line is we're not feeling well, so we're feeling stuck. What is it that I'm really needing? Am I needing to relax my shoulders? Am I needing to do a little practice, such as I'm needing to feel calm? So I say, well, may I feel calm? I'm with my child, I'm with my parent, I'm with the people all on the road. May you feel calm, because no doubt I'm not alone in this. Mm-hmm. May we all feel calm. And, you know, when doing that, we come out of our own heads, back into our lives, and we start feeling a little bit better. And so, again, happiness is not about just feeling good. It's about feeling that no matter what comes my way, I can handle it. It's going to be okay. Because when we do that, we can actually give ourselves what we need and rebalance. Mm-hmm.
So you're a psychologist, and when I think about depression, I think of it as muck, but you just sort of ruminate in a lot of
rehashing the past.
Darkness, rehashing the past, maybe being worried about the future, but just those stories just keep repeating over and over for you. And I'm curious how, you know, you're talking here about mindfulness-based stress reduction, and people talk a lot about meditation, and I know meditation is such a broad category. For people who really want to learn what you're teaching in terms of emotional dysregulation and pausing and being more curious about the feelings and the thoughts that are happening, can they just do any kind of meditation, or how do you learn what you're talking about?
Is the question what meditation should you begin with?
Well, are all meditations the same? You're a psychologist. You've written the book on Uncovering Happiness. You've done an enormous amount of research on the science and neuroscience. And I'm wondering, for people that are listening, do they need to study mindfulness-based stress reduction, or is just learning meditation going to help them?
You bring up a really important point. And this is a point that people should be aware of when they're engaging any app or any meditation. there's a line between feeling stable and unstable. If someone's feeling really depressed, feeling really stuck, the rumination is like, it really has a hold on you. Sitting down and practicing a breathing meditation or a body scan or an open awareness practice where you're just aware of all things as they are, you know, these kind of beautiful mindfulness meditations may not really be the place to begin. When we're really not feeling well, our body needs to be engaged usually. We need to be more active. You know, one of the key categories or things that I talk about is the real importance of play. You know, there's a guy who's a leading play researcher, Brian Sutton Smith, who said the opposite of play is not work, it's depression. And so we as adults and even teens and adolescents in this world are oftentimes missing this element of doing purposeful or perhaps purposeless activities with things we typically kind of enjoy or find interesting. And so, you know, you and I were kidding before this interview around something that, you know, I've learned and like to do while making mistakes sometimes. And so in making mistakes, oftentimes one of the things that kicks us into a shame spiral or ignites our depression or feeds it is we sometimes become self-critical, self-judgmental, you know, and instead we can do 180-degree shift, like, and we can instead celebrate that by lifting our hands over our head and going, woohoo, you know. And in that, we're doing a funny little trick, you know, with our brain, which is kind of teaching it that, you know, mistakes are okay. Everybody makes them. It's human. We can celebrate them. In fact, some of the most successful people in the world are people that have made more mistakes than anybody else. You look at all the athletes out there. The most successful athletes have missed more shots than anybody else. And so basketball, soccer, whatever. And so if we can learn to celebrate our mistakes, be more playful with ourselves, like even in meditation studio, like if people are taking the, first of all, a wonderful experiment to do with this app anyways, is to just be curious about and experiment with the variety of different practices, see what calls out to you, see what you notice. That's bringing mindfulness to it. Another thing that speaks to what we're talking about is really the Uncovering Happiness course, and people can kind of go through that. But play is a really important thing to just begin to bring alive in our lives. And one thing we can do is just think back to our childhood and think, what was play like for me as a kid? And just think if you can remember those memories and see if visualize them in your mind and see what that does to your body and see what how that might translate into adulthood. And one caveat, because this is important, if you think back to your childhood and there's no aspect of play, you say, well, that's the issue. I had no play in my childhood, which happens, especially with people who have experienced a lot of depression. Bring it forward a little bit and say, okay, what about adolescence? What about my 20s? Like, you know, where do I notice play? You know, wherever, bring it forward to wherever the earliest time might be. What was that like for me? What were the aspects of it? If I like constructing Legos, you know, is there something about constructing that makes me happy? If I like to play outside with my friends, is something about being with people? Is it something about getting my hands dirty outside in nature? And how does that translate into adulthood and start putting that into practice?
I love that. I love that concept of play. And I think I was listening to a recording for an MBSR course, and someone was saying that the saddest thing she ever heard was one of her students said that she thought there was only one way to do things, that there was only one right way, and that had caused her so much stress her entire life. And I love this idea of, you know, sort of injecting into our children and adults that there's more than one way to do things, that failure is just a beginning and a learning process. And, you know, there's so much to take away from judging about how we do things in life. So I think it's really cool that you say play and celebrate a failure.
Mistakes,
not failure. Not but
failure,
I mean,
too. Yeah, you can do that, too.
Yeah, so start thinking of that differently, because it is so stressful to believe that certain things have to be a certain way. I think that really makes for a very rigid
perfectionism. Perfectionism is the clear seed to anxiety
thing,
and depression.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, it's really hard. And that's why it's harder to say, celebrate my mistakes. What I encourage people who are listening to do is instead literally throw your arms over your head and go, woohoo!
Woohoo!
And even if it doesn't feel right and it feels weird,
just practice it.
Because what you're doing is, much like yoga and different things, is you're opening your body. Depression, anxiety is a contracted physical thing. Opening your body. You're actually vocalizing something, which kind of, again, brings more opens up your vocal cords as well. And it's the opposite of what's going on physiologically when you're feeling depressed. It also starts to condition in the mind that mistakes are okay. So even if it doesn't feel right, actually do that physiological movement and that woohoo. And even if it feels silly or whatever, but then that's part of the that's part of it. In fact,
silly is good.
Yeah, it feels silly. You know, because what you're doing is just kind of playing with it. And there's so many ways to do that. So again, not just telling yourself to celebrate, but actually doing that action. The action of it's important.
Well, what I love about what you're saying is that these actions, including meditating, really have the ability to change our brains.
Totally. Well, that science is bearing that very clearly. Yeah, we can use our minds to change our brains. And we want the kind of change that's implicit. The same kind where you can put your hands on a keyboard and you know exactly. You can type, you know, what a great day without having to think about it. But if I asked you, can you recite to me the middle row of the keyboard? It's very difficult to do because it's that type of information. It's implicit memory and explicit memory. We want the implicit part that happens when you intentionally practice and repeat something over time, it starts to become automatic. Mm-hmm. So in the same way, if you practice and repeat certain mindfulness practices, playing with yourself, engaging self-compassion with yourself, these are things I call natural antidepressants. Mm-hmm. If you practice and repeat these things over time, they'll start to come to you automatically, just like riding a bike. It's called procedural memory. It's memorizing certain procedures. So there's a certain procedure to becoming present. Mm-hmm. There's a certain procedure to recognizing you're having difficulty and inclining to support yourself. There's a certain procedure to being playful in life. Mm-hmm. And we want to allow that to become automatic because that's what neuroplasticity is. We neurons that fire together wire together. We've heard you may or may not have heard that phrase before. Donald Hebb, Canadian psychologist. And you know, so what we're doing is we're just kind of creating neural firing so that we can change things. And once you recognize that they're coming automatically, you know you've changed some neural structure there. And that's the key.
What do I have to do? So do I have to meditate 20 minutes a day? Do I have to study something? Do I have to find my own teacher? In addition to listening to these great apps that are out there, what do I do to get to that place?
Oh, you got to meet yourself where you're at. And so, you know, what feels right for you? Like for me, remember, my story is I started to just kind of read books. That's what was interesting to me at first.
Yeah.
Then I wanted to do a little more. So, you know, what I found in my life, my experience has told me what's key is to find other people, if it's possible, who are also, you know, interested in being happier maybe or practicing, you know, mindfulness or meditation. That sometimes is difficult. But if you can go on, let's say, the meditation studio or, you know, whatever, and you can start just dipping your toes into listening and being receptive to the practices and then being curious about what you're noticing because you have to kind of go with what's speaking to you. But the key is practice. So remember, you didn't learn how to ride a bike by just getting on once and then kind of you fell and so you gave up. You had to ride it over and over and over again, and then it just became automatic. If we give ourselves time each day to pay attention to ourselves, to do something that's caring for ourselves for a concentrated period of time, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, you're going to have you're very likely to have good results in stress reduction and feeling happier in life. And so whether it's the apps in the meditation studio, play with it, be curious about it, be open to it. Whether it start off by reading Uncovering Happiness or a variety of other books, get exposed to it, put it in your environment. If you have people that are also interested in it, you know, talk to them about it. The more you talk about it, the better.
Great. I know you're doing a lot with mindful awareness. So, you know, there's the meditation that we practice in the 5 minutes a day or whatever our particular practice is. How does that help us in relationship with other people? How do we get to that point where we're kinder and
it's a good question. And the answer is it starts with us. And so when we're starting to be kinder towards ourselves, we're going to start naturally being kinder to other people. And, you know, we've heard this line forever, we're our own worst critic. Mm. And the reason it's a kind of a cliche line is because it's so true.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we're so hard on ourselves oftentimes. And so the moment that's why the two pillars of uncovering happiness is mindfulness and self-compassion. Mindfulness is the awareness to say, oh my God, I'm so hard on myself. Self-compassion says, oh, What do I need? What can I do to support myself? And then taking action. Like the Dalai Lama said, it's not enough to be compassionate. You must act. Mm. And so it's not enough to recognize I'm being really hard on myself. We must recognize, we must play with understanding what I'm needing right now and starting to give ourselves, you know, that in that moment. And as we kind of practice and repeat that over time, that's the kind of stuff that starts becoming automatic.
What do you say to people who say that meditating will take them off their edge and make them maybe mellower or a little more relaxed and maybe not as assertive in a workspace? You know, you hear people talking about that every once in a while. What's your thought on how do we lose our edge or not?
Sometimes people, if they're practicing it just to be relaxed and calm, they might be kind of addicted to the hurriedness of their mind and like the kind of creativity boost that's happening in their mind. And they get too calm and at ease, and they feel like the tranquility is, nullifying things out. But really the intention of mindfulness, let's say as an example, mindfulness meditation, is to be aware. And so in awareness, you're opening up the pool to all the things that are here. And so it enhances your ability to see maybe creative ideas that are there, or the inner genius that resides within. And so I'll just tell you a short practice that, mm-hmm. you know, that comes out of the now effect, which is a way of using practice. You know, no matter what practice you're listening to, you can use this, have this intention on how to work with your wandering mind to enhance an awareness of creativity, which gives you an edge in my mind. So this is a practice called See, Touch, Go. And so basically, whatever practice you're doing, whatever meditation you're doing, your mind's going to wander, just the way the human brain works. And so when it does, instead of just bringing it back to whatever the meditation is or the voice in the meditation, allow the voice, if it's an auto-guided one, just to be in the background, while instead you pay attention for a second to where your mind went. So in other words, touch that thought, spend a moment with it, because it could be quite a creative thought or something that you're needing to remember or whatever it is. And so then you take note of that, and then you very gently guide your attention back.
Okay, that's a great explanation. Thank you so much for that. The other thing I wanted to ask you before we end is you have a center in LA called the Center for Mindful Living.
Yep.
And I remember you telling me that like one of your goals is to take mindfulness off the cushion, so to speak.
One of my passions is I really explore this deeply in Uncovering Happiness, because it's a key moment. It's a key aspect of this is incorporating play in mindfulness, mindfulness, the underlying intention of it, and you see this in like that Buddha laughing figure, is to be playful and have fun. It's not also serious. And so we can do this on the cushion and off the cushion, but we wanted people to start learning mindfulness and having fun at the same time. And so we're integrating classes where, and these are all, everyone has to be a trained teacher of mindfulness and also a trained teacher of whatever they're doing. So, you know, classes such as mindful cooking, mindful surfing, mindful improv, mindful photography, learning how to see things differently with perceptions, learning how to find stability on the board, learning how to be more present to eating and the flavors and colors around cooking, and also also learning how to play and have fun and be flexible with the improv. And so this is a complete labor of love, and it's a lot of fun. And the classes are selling out.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. People are having just the greatest time. And so I'm like overjoyed by this kind of, and Mindful Magazine called this the next level of mindfulness classes.
Yeah. I love it. I think it's so great. And if anybody's in LA, they should check out the Center for Mindful Living, because it just sounds like so much fun. I remember Stephen Batchelor said in his interview, he's a Buddhist, and he had said something about, he does a lot of photography, but he said meditating before he does any kind of his, you know, any photographic sessions changes the whole nature of what he's photographing. I love that.
Yeah, if we want to talk about like what's a natural antidepressant. In other words, you know, what's a, because being depressed or being anxious or suffering in any way is a way of disengaging. In some ways it could be, but it's an experience of disengagement.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so mindfulness is inherently an engaging thing. It's an engaging practice. You're engaging the present moment. But then you do these things, which are so active at the same time, integrate the natural antidepressants of play and creativity and So you're getting like a whole concoction, a cocktail of to me, really uncovering happiness, the real happiness that's there, that eudaimonic happiness, that feeling connected, meaning, sense of meaning and purpose in life. And what fun to be able to do that for ourselves and others.
Right, exactly. And it connects us to each other as well.
Thanks so much to Elisha for joining us today. You can find out more about him at mindfullivingla.org. And all of his books are available at all major booksellers. If you have feedback or suggestions for guests, email us at founders@meditationstudioapp.com. And don't forget to check out Meditation Studio in the App Store and check out Muse at choosemuse.com. We'll see you next time.